It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news in the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny B.
And I'm Johnny Smacks. Welcome to podcast 164, coming to you like Ted Hastings chasing bent coppers in Line of Duty. We didn't float up the lagoon in the last bubble. On this week's podcast, we chat to Joe Brawley, and we promise we will not cut him off.
He said there's no point allowing Junior B matches until they open up the pubs. Noel Furlong will be here with the news.
If she was a rapper, her name would be Maura the Stallion. Ooh. Maureen is actually here. She is in the studio, going to fuck shit up with her mystery topic.
Oh, shit. And as traditional as managing to stand in the wrong gap when moving cattle and your fatter roaring at you, we round off the podcast with our
Yurts and Dirts
of the Week.
Before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast, son.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, son. About apprenticeships, Mountain. Mountain got in touch. He said, there's an old lad near me in Cavan who used to do a bit of thatching. Well, he was up on a roof thatching an old cottage one day when a big black car pulled in and the occupants got out and started taking photographs. Well, the old lad got the fright of his life. He jumped off the roof and broke his hip. He thought it was a government car trying to catch lads working while on the dole. Turns out it was a couple of Yanks on holiday. They'd never seen a real-life thatcher before, and they were only taking holiday photos.
Brilliant. Only in Cavan.
By mountain, by.
Declan was in touch.
Declan.
I was an apprentice farrier for the past 2 years. We work all around Wexford for cat money. 7 to 5 Monday to Friday. Shoeing race horses is not the worst thing out there physically. They're often highly strong, roughly every 1 in 5, being either ignorant, i.e. leaning on you and purposely putting all their weight in you while you hold their foot between your legs.
That'll do.
Is that enough Wexford?
That's enough, yeah.
While others are just dirty and will try and kick you or bite you when you're working. It is by no means a glamorous job and is unfortunately looked down upon in the horsey game.
Ah, outrageous.
Lads have little respect for the farrier, so my boss's motto was, the more you charge them, the more they respect you. Charging sometimes €90 for a set in some big yards. To trim a young horse or a mare, it's €30 and takes 5 to 10 minutes max. And a set of shoes takes 30 minutes. We could easily get 20 sets done between myself and the other apprentice. The fucker worked so hard, I developed 2 bulging discs and a trapped nerve in my lower back. Then discovered I have severe scoliosis in my upper back. My boss, age 40, has just been told to retire as he won't be able to function by 50 if he stays going. I honestly reckon it's one of the most physical jobs in the world.
20 sets of shoes at €90 a go.
Oh, he's got the maths done.
€1,800.
And what's the VAT in that, lad?
Oh, the horsey lads are all cash, I'd say.
Oh,
they have loads of money.
We're going to get some messages in next week. Just been like, retract.
The horsey crowd have money. Come on now.
Yeah, but they make you wait for it. And that's the horsey thing.
That's the horsey,
like,
yeah.
How much do you want it? Well, I'm desperate. Nam are going to take it. Yeah, right. Take 20% less.
Heard that.
Done deal. That's what we
listen. Horsey crowd are going to have to come on and defend themselves.
Just want to say, allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, hello, this is Mick from the horsey crowd. You need to come on. Yeah, but is farrier...
Change his voice, he'd be like, no, I just want to reveal, it's not all cash in the horsey game, son.
Is it worse than block lane, being a farrier?
It is, yeah. A block won't kick you. A horse will.
Block lane is tough going.
It's fair enough, yeah.
We need to do a topic on what are the worst jobs in the world. Yeah.
Mental note, Neil.
Maria messaged the pod saying, I am a goldsmith. I did 3-year course of jewellery design and manufacturing at a technical university in South Africa. The subjects they taught are design, manufacturing, drawing, business studies, geology and metallurgy. I had a year as an apprentice. Then you do an exam, a technical exercise. I don't know, is that like squats or lunges?
Kind of
squats to be fairly technical. This is to make sure you can do all the technical techniques you need, and it's also time sensitive. And when you pass, you get your goldsmith's cert. From there, you can start with raw metal, melt, roll, shape, and build, construct a ring, earrings, or anything you want to do. I only worked it as a designer as I had an art degree. Jeez, you some qualifications.
Mm.
But you need to know how to make it so you can design it. The job can include identifying stones and grading diamonds. And you can also study longer with De Beers for this. If you ever need a ring designed, I'm always happy to do it. I've also trained in stained glass windows, repairs, as a seamstress, art, and as a graphic designer.
She's living in Care.
No way.
Yeah.
So would she make us a stained glass window of like a giant chicken roll? What's St. Bridget drinking a pint or something? No?
Maria, it's listen, the offer's been rolled out to you, Maria. Get in touch.
If you can do double glazed stained glass windows, I mean, that's some qualifications for a goldsmith, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm still unsure as to what they actually do.
They make rings, and jewellery and stuff. Okay. Yeah, grading right. Diamonds and...
Okay. Does John Quirk make rings?
I'd say he buys them in.
Okay.
He'd be like fixing them and engraving them and stuff.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was just
He probably could if you wanted.
Yeah?
Our local jeweller, yeah.
Darren emailed, I'm a qualified cooper. In case you don't know what that is, I don't. We make and repair wooden whiskey barrels. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, there is only maybe 6 active coopers in this country. Me and my brother being 2 of them. It's so rare there isn't any courses or apprenticeships in Ireland to train in, so we had to join the Coopers Federation of Scotland, which is a great way of doing it. No college or classroom. So the way they run it is, you register with them, start working in a cooperage. For me, it was Kilbeggan for the first 2 years, then move to Foxford for the second 2 years. When you're in your third year, 2 testers who are qualified coopers working on behalf of the Federation come to our place of work, watch us work and set out skills tests for us to do so they can see us use all the hand tools, and if they think we're good enough, then we pass. Once the 4 years are up, you're qualified. It's a very rare, very physically demanding but very rewarding trade. We do everything here by hand using tools and methods dating back generations, and there's no glue, nails or screws holding the casts together, just pressure from the hoops.
Love a good hoop. That's a manly job.
So that's those barrels, like in a beer garden now, you'd be sitting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't use glue or anything in case it affects the whiskey that's aging in it.
Darren, if you know of any barrels going, I'm doing up the backyard as we speak. I'm looking for a couple of tables.
Gavin said, on the subject of apprenticeships, one that wasn't mentioned was the Merchant Navy cadetships. Over 3 years, you can train to become either an engineer on board ships or a deck officer like I am, which puts you on the navigation side. I'm from Scotland. You'll remember us. We are Gavin Jess from the Valentine's Day live stream.
Yes.
Hello, Gavin and Jess. He did a 3-year cadetship. 12 months of that I actually spent on board ships all over the world. That's cool, isn't it? Great job with great opportunities, and would highly recommend it to anyone who wants to see a bit more of the world. In my first year qualified on the job, I was in America, Panama, Taiwan and Trinidad. Met some unforgettable people and been in some unbelievable situations over the years. One story that was an eye-opening experience for me was when I went to Boca Chica in the Dominican Republic with a few of the crew. Boca Chica sounds like some crap.
I've got no idea where that is.
Where are you going for the weekend? Boca Chica?
Yeah.
We'd been on the ship for 2 months with hardly a drop of alcohol. So when we got the chance to go ashore, man, did we take it. We headed to the beach as we'd heard it would have everything a group of sesh-hungry sailors would need to make the lads back home wonder if we were out here working at all. The taxi driver told us to watch out for some of the bars on the beach as they may have some local mafia owners. We took it as a bit of a joke and carried on. No.
Wrong.
We stopped off at an appropriately named sailor bar.
Oh.
Where all the waitresses were in sailor girl outfits. Mm. A classy establishment, but at $1.50 a bottle, we weren't complaining. As the evening went on, plenty of girls from the bar started propositioning us, and we realized what bar we had ended up at. As we tried to leave, they would get more and more insistent for money, even though we weren't interested in their services that they were looking to provide.
Well,
yeah. After a few minutes of arguing, the supposed owner of the bar turned up and started asking us why we were giving his girls trouble. We tried to explain that we were just leaving and not looking to cause any trouble. He then took me and one of the other guys aside and said, "Are you bothering my girls and stopping them from working? And now you leave without paying them. This isn't good, my friends."
Yeah, I feel like he should have had an accent there.
"Are you bothering my girls? Huh? This isn't good, my friends." Huh? I don't know what people in the Dominican Republic talk like. Sorry. Again,
you've just branded them as Mexicans.
Yeah,
there,
well,
anyways.
What are you going to do? And he said, "We were just leaving. We don't want any trouble." He then pulled back his jacket and put his hands on his hips, revealing a holstered gun on his waist, and said, "Do you want me to do the accent?"
"Yeah, please."
I think for $50 each, we can have no more trouble. What do you say?
He's gotten even more Mexican since last time. Where's he been?
Well, when he gets angrier, he gets more Mexican.
Okay, okay, okay.
At this point, we knew we had only one option. We had to scrape together what money we had left and hand it over. $200 later, we were free to go. But all in a memorable day. With that and other things I've been able to see and do over the years, some definitely not podcast friendly, wah-hop, I wouldn't change it for anything.
Oh, so join the cadet ship and you can be propositioned by a Mexican.
You can shakedown, Dominican shakedown. But this is, I feel like he's definitely only telling that story because his missus is listening. All these prostitutes came up and I swear they robbed all my money. I definitely didn't spend it.
Yeah, his missus is like, where's all that money? And he's like, so right. This other guy who was with me, who we didn't even know who he was. He was just randomly with us. I think his name was like Peter. It was all him.
He had a Mexican accent. Yeah.
It was all him.
You wouldn't get that in the Shamrock Lounge, I tell you.
You would not.
Huey Forson, you'd eat cocktail sausages. No, they're too hot. Eat the sausage, my friend.
That's a care shakedown. Emma got in touch. My dad delivers meat for a living, but on his Wednesday off, he works in a butcher shop making the sausages and pudding in a back room.
What a man.
That's the kind of man.
God's work.
Isn't it? By Jesus, he's a real man. Anyway, the shop got two apprentices a few years ago and my dad decided he'd take it upon himself to take the piss out of them both. Customer had ordered a pig's head for God knows what and it was sitting in the back room when my dad got in. When the lads arrived, my dad sent one of them down to Dunn's to buy a razor so he could shave the pig's head and make sure it was presentable. Not all of the hair had been singed off the head, so it was a bit stubbly. After the pig was clean shaven, the same poor chap was handed a bottle brush and told to brush the pig's teeth as well. The other lad was helping my dad make the pudding later on that day. Dad was adding the ingredients into the mixture when he saw the poor young lad. Oh, I forgot the bucket of steam. Will you run out there and get me a bucket of steam? He handed him the bucket, an empty one of those buckets for catering sauces that have a lid in them, and he sent him out to the yard at the back of the centre where there's a unit or a pipe that lets steam out. After about 10 minutes, when he still hadn't come back, my dad went out to investigate. He found not only the apprentice standing trying to get steam into the bucket, but also the Polish maintenance man trying to help him. There haven't been any more poor unfortunates for him to terrorise ever since, and he never heard any more about how the pair of them got on. But I hope for their sake, they're not going around shaving pigs' heads or trying to catch buckets of steam.
Man, yes!
When I was an apprentice butcher, we sent one of the boys who worked in Super Value up to every butcher in town for a pudding bender. And I swear to God, this was Christmas week. And like my boss came down and was like, where the fuck is like, whatever his name is.
Say his name, where's Luke?
Yeah, where's Luke? He was like, where the fuck is Luke? And I was like, I've got no idea. And then he was like, no, seriously, where is he? I said, look, sorry, like I know we're busy in the shop, but I'm after sending him up to Norman's there for a pudding bender. And he just went, fucking idiot. And then he came back and was like, Norman didn't have a pudding bender. And then I was like, well, you may go over and ask Brendan Healy. And then my boss was like, yeah, go over and ask Brendan. Swear to God.
Never too busy for that.
Like it was the shop was chock or block. And he was like, if he's gonna go over, we may as well just add to it. Yeah. Brilliant.
Also, pig's head is lovely. On Maura's mystery topic of can you be friends with your ex, one listener said, I agree. I 100% agree that you cannot be friends with your ex. A few years ago, I had an ex who was friends with three of her exes and invited them to her 21st. You can imagine how awkwardly that party went. On other occasions, she would tell me that one of her exes, who was just before me, would hang out with her in her bedroom, and she would claim nothing happened, but would ghost me for the entire duration they would be together. Safe to say, that relationship didn't last long. Yes, you need to drop kick her out a window. Another ex of mine was in a car accident with me. We ended up breaking up a few months later over something else. I thought it was a mutual breakup until I got a letter in the post to say she was coming after me for whiplash a year and a half after the accident. She ended up getting 20 grand on the claim.
Oh, Jesus.
I still think it's a bit petty. All good now as I'm happily engaged to a girl from Mayo. So I guess you got to go through a few bad ones to meet the right one.
It sounds like that whole relationship was a car crash. Yes. Wow. Come on. Nice. I went there. Oh, man.
Are you telling people she just got whiplash from riding or something?
I was just about to say that as well.
Claim, I'm just such a beast.
Got whiplash. It's a pair of 20
I'm an animal.
Now, on puberty, everyone's favorite subject, we had an anonymous person write in who said, so, I was 16 in the CBS and we were in computer class one day. Miss Melly was the teacher's name. Like you said, she wasn't a stunner but decent, and I'd get a horn a fair bit in her class. Then one day, the lad beside me spotted what was going on and told the rest of the lads. They kept at me until she asked me what was wrong. I ignored her, going redder by the second. Eventually, she made me stand up and saw my bulge. Those grey pants didn't do much concealing. She said, what's that? And of course, me being smart said, what you think it is? A horn. I got sent out of class and sent home. I took a few days off sick thinking everything would die down, but no. When I got back, I was brought straight to the principal's office, who rang my mother. They made me explain to her exactly what had happened and what I said. I nearly died with the sweat coming out of me. I wasn't expelled, but asked to leave the school, as they knew if they put the reason down why I had to leave, I wouldn't get into another school, as I was some kind of sex menace. They said I was lucky the guards weren't involved. That's a long time ago now, and I still get jeered about. My mother looked at me differently for a while too. That is excellent. When I received that message, I got some laugh out of it.
That's a bit harsh though.
Yeah, like what? Like, you're going to be like, we kicked him out of school while he got a horn. Like, if that was the case, there'd be no lads in school. So, I mean, every lad under 15, whether, you know, it's a teacher or a chicken roll or just a general bust of a horn in midday.
Like, you get him.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, piss, he's could be, 16,
could have been, that could have been a piss horn.
He's 16, though. I don't understand it. Like, can men just not get rid of their horns? Like, think of...
It's not that easy, Mara. Okay. Particularly a piss horn.
Yeah,
you know, you have to go. Hence, you have to go to the toilet. Morning glory, Joe. You know what I mean? Are you telling me you don't wake up in the morning on an absolute?
And
rod?
He's looking up at you.
Yeah, and he's like, "Drain me,
see, Maury.
Take me to the river."
You never got a horn, Maury. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
horns are serious business.
What are you going to do with this young lad? Like, make him write lines. Must not get a horn in class. Like 100 times.
I must not get a horn.
I'm just thinking of the poor teachers.
He's probably getting horny writing it.
Yeah, standing there, some 16-year-old with a big red face and a horn looking at you. You'd be like, get out. I never want to see you again. So,
but she shouldn't have asked him to stand up. Like, you know, she should have known that would score.
How long is she in the game now? Miss Melly. Also, send us in a photo of her. Only joking.
Oh, brilliant.
Sarah said, just listen to this week's pod and skitting at the poor girl who misdiagnosed herself so many years ago on last week's podcast. Yeah. Mm. I have a similar story. When I was about 10, I had to attend a cardiologist in Crumlin. Part of the appointment was that they were going to set an ultrasound to look at my heart. The doctor warned me that the gel would be cold and proceeded to carry on the ultrasound. All was going relatively okay until I started hysterically crying. The doctor left the room to give me and my mother a few minutes alone, as so that I might calm down and we could get on with the rest of the appointment. My mum at this point was very confused by my reaction and asked, is everything okay? And had the gel really been that cold? At this point, I was a snotty Hagen mess and exclaimed, Mom, I'm too young to have a baby. Well, she roared laughing at me, told me I wasn't having a baby. Why would I even think that? Apparently, I'd only ever seen ultrasounds being used on Home and Away, and so was not having reached the age of the birds and the bees talk yet. A very innocent perception of how babies come into the world. We still laugh at it now 15 years later, and I'm not sure I will ever be able to keep a straight face if I do have an ultrasound again.
Brilliant.
That comes in from Sarah, who learned everything she knows about sex from Home and Away.
Lastly, on smelly cat beds, Robert emailed, lads, just listening to the podcast from today and a few mates told me Smacks mentioned he came into Maxi Zoo. To answer Smacks's question on the Russell cushion, Mara was bang on with her guess of catnip. The cushion is infused with it, and it's like LSD for cats. They go mental for it. But you're right, it smells horrendous. Like sweaty arse mixed with a dead badger and feet. Anyway, I hope the cat got some use out of stuff before he legged it on ye. To Mr. Johnny B, a hamper awaits your presence for Goujon and Marley whenever you get a chance to call in. My wife Natasha messaged you on Instagram. I suck with social media, can't drive them all. And she was delighted with your quick response, so thanks for that. Also, for the wonderful Maura, who somehow manages to keep some control over Tui, your laugh's infectious. I love it when Noel makes you go off. So don't ever stop minding the two boys. I've a hamper for Ted as well, if one of the lads want to collect it, as I know you're not a local, being from up the road. So that's from Robert in Maxi Zoo and Clonmel, who Maxi Zoo have done really well out of podcasts in recent weeks.
You have enough mentions. Thank you.
Also, Robert... Don't know if you listen to the extra pod, but I revealed during the week I'm in the process of buying a dog. I'll be into you, boy. I'll be into you. Right. Who's going to get the Two Johnnies podcast mug? Sponsored by KC Sports, who carry all the lovely Two Johnnies merchandise. See twojohnnies.ie for all of
I like the lad whose father pranked the two apprentices. I think that was great crack. So
I really like Horn Boy.
Yeah. I don't know if we should be rewarding that kind of behaviour.
What? Getting a horn? That's natural.
No, I mean, God bless the horn. I just mean... The fact that
it's a bit inappropriate. Made the teacher feel very uncomfortable.
Good old prank, you know, shaving a pig's head. That was funny.
Okay. Oh, I'm outvoted. Okay. So pig's head daddy. If you can email podcast at twojohnnies.ie with all your contact details, Maura will get the mug set up and we'll get it sent out to you as quick as we can. Wow, shaving pig's heads, boy.
Yes,
there you go.
It's back. Weekly roundup. What's been going on, John Boy?
Oh, John Boy.
You shaved Go Faster stripes into my hair.
Yeah. Against me will. You know what I mean? You're taking my barbering skills for granted now. You're like, oh, I want Go Faster stripes. Like,
yeah, but I heard afterwards then that an X is what's in now. All the young lads are shaving a big X into the side of their head.
But, do you know what
I
seen?
I didn't know that at the time.
You know what the big thing now I seen is, like, it looks like a tiger clawed you on the side of your head. It's like, you know, a little... Like you got nick off a cat.
Class.
Yeah. Now, I have a cat there, I know that'll do that for you for free. She's back and she's, you know, he's rare.
Did you see the Go Faster stripes, Mara?
It was more like a, I don't know.
It was horrendous. It looked like he had had a brain operation.
You did a terrible job.
Yeah.
I rocked up. Lad, will you do Go Faster stripes for the crack on my head? And I obviously didn't bring my good razor. And then he pulls out this relic and he was like, there's around 6 seconds battery life in that there. And expecting me to work miracles. A man's only as good as his tools.
You've shaved it off though, have you?
Yes, Max gave me a tidy up then.
Yeah, we finished it. He's looking good now. No, it's hard, you know. I'd be showing Johnny photos of lads online. Been like, I'll do your hair like that. And then I do his hair like that and I style it and he looks class. And then I come in the next day and he just hasn't mastered hair gel. If anyone's out there who can like sign him up to some sort of an online course,
I've only had a couple of years now. So.
Yeah, well, you know, by the time you're at retirement age, you should be like slicking it with gel. Yeah. You'll have got it by then. Good news, though, Mara's in the studio. Welcome home, Mara.
It's very weird being like for the past year, you two have been like voices in my head. Ooh. So now it's like you're real.
Like, you say that like it's a bad
and
you've, thing.
Like new hair and everything. It's just like, yeah.
Did you enjoy your COVID test?
Oh, that was a bit bad now. That was like, I can't believe you asked me, which is your favourite nostril? It's like, I don't have a favourite, just do it. Like, come on. Like.
It was great. I really enjoyed sticking it down Maura's throat and up her nose then. Maura was not happy.
So inappropriate. Anyway, I'm COVID free, so that's why I can be in your presence.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Do we look different? Do we look like we've aged now? It's nearly a year since you've seen us.
Is they very tanned?
Huh. Well, oh, jeez, I don't even have fake tan on.
I don't know. Is there, yeah.
I'd say we're hot. It's fucking roasting.
Yeah. that radiator. It could be studio lighting, yeah.
That radiator over in the corner of the studio sometimes doesn't work. But of course, the hottest day of the year so far, and the radiator is pumping heat out. Disposable underpants weather here. But thanks to everyone who signed up to the extra podcast that's available on the Patreon for €6 a month. Ye are keeping us off the dole, off the scratcher, right? On last week's extra podcast, number 54.
We were talking about super fans and we got into a debate about men who have soccer team tattoos.
I just want to go on record right now before you hear this clip and say I didn't condone this. My WhatsApp group was lighting up during the week. I have friends who have, you know, soccer team tattoos and that's okay for them. It's not for me and Johnny, but lads, more power to you. A lot of lads have Liverpool tattoos.
I find that mental.
Yeah, I was tempted when I was a young lad, but like my tattoos are bad enough now without like mosaic of Liverpool on my arm.
At what age are lads getting Liverpool and Man United tattoos?
I know grown men have got them. Like actively got them. Yeah.
In their mid-20s?
Yeah.
There's a lad we know and he's got Manchester United, you know, tattooed down his arm. And I feel like I'm supposed to just treat him like he's a normal human. I'm not going to say what he works as. Let's just say he's like, you know, imagine he rings me and is like, oh, have you thought about changing your energy provider? And I'm like, no. Have you thought about having a random city in England tattooed down your fucking forearm?
Listen, I'm a massive Liverpool fan and I get it. And now, in fairness, when I was younger, I did think about getting a tattoo. But then, like, but to be honest, like, Annie was like, if you get that, I'm going to leave you. So, so I thought I'd get the tattoo. Like. It's been said about our guest that he could cause a riot in a convent. Whether it be as a barrister, GAA pundit, columnist, or appearing on the Claire Byrne Show, he's always stirring up debate. Put seatbelts on your ears, lads. Please welcome to the Two Johnnies podcast, Mr. Joe Brawley.
We can't not ask you about the Claire Byrne Show that you were on, and they gave you the black card pretty early on.
Well, I've never seen that before. I was very, humiliated. I mean, obviously I'm a big boy, but I'm a barrister of 30 years standing, veteran sort of public broadcaster. And I was very, very humiliated by that. And it was really very damaging what happened. And the papers in the north here, for example, had it in their headlines, Brawley booted off Claire Byrne for attacking DUP. So the clear implication in that was that I was a person who can't be trusted to not be sectarian, for example, to who doesn't express reasonable views, and my work supporting the PSNI, working with both sides of the community here, helping out at the Peace Centre, I am absolutely anti-sectarian, but it's been very damaging to me, and that damage is quickly sort of starting to spread.
But I mean, your view on United Ireland, you said on the show that you didn't really care if there was a United Ireland, which I think shows that you're obviously not,
Hardcore,
as
well. I'm very opposed to violence, and I've always been very opposed to violence. And one of the reasons that I donated the kidney and that I started the organ donation charity and have immersed myself in the sanctity of human life is because of what I experienced as a child. And when I was reared and Dungiven, I mean, I think I'm on record as saying there were only two things that were important in Dungiven: the GAA and the IRA. And there was a lot of damage caused. You think of how weird our society was, that it seemed perfectly normal that the British could set up a prison camp outside Belfast and then put 1,000 Catholic men in it without ever charging them with any offence or trying them.
It's crazy looking back now.
My father was interned for 3.5 years. And so it was all very violent and very dysfunctional. And I resolved that my life would be devoted to a very, very different path. And, that it was very, very important that we reached a sensible solution in the North. So my solution is that we start with a two-state solution, that we have the North, we have the South. The North keeps its own parliament, but that it becomes independent of the UK, which I think is inevitable anyway. The Brits want out. That's the bottom line. And, they have no economic interest in the North anymore. In 1920, it was different. We were an industrial powerhouse, shipbuilding capital of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all gone. The linen's gone. And so we're simply a burden on them. And there'll be very little kinship between the Northern Protestant and English people. I mean, Arlene Foster said that she would move to Norfolk if there was a United Ireland. I have to say, I just don't believe that. It wouldn't make any sense. And I think that it typifies the essential dishonesty of the DUP that they've... One of the points I was making the other night, or trying to make, was that you've got to get past the noise of the DUP, because they're not a serious political party. They have no interest in a long-term strategy. We see that with Brexit. They wouldn't support Theresa May's soft Brexit. That would have guaranteed a United Kingdom between the North and Britain by keeping us in the East. So they had the balance of power, but they destroyed that. And then as soon as Boris had a whopping majority, he peed all over the DUP.
But you can't ignore them, Joe. We're going to have to work with them for peace,
To an extent. We have to be reasonable and be logical, but you can't tolerate it. mean, you can't tolerate the sectarianism, the racism, the homophobia. It cannot be tolerated. I mean, whenever Jim Wells was the Minister for Health, and I have to say, I worked very closely with Peter Robinson, who had become very good friends with Martin McGuinness when we were, you know, putting together the law to change organ donation in the North and, you know, increasing funding for the transplant community and all of that. And I thought, I must say, I was very impressed with Peter Robinson throughout all of that. But we had a day, a sort of a public day of getting the message out. And Jim Wells was the health minister. And Jim, you know, Jim's the guy who said that he would, just very recently, he said he would no longer watch Strictly Come Dancing because they had allowed a gay couple to participate in it. But as soon as Jim saw me, and me and Shane Finnegan, the guy I gave the kidney to, we were hosting the day, and politicians from all hues were there, you know, and we were always very careful and respectful, as why would we not be, to the unionist politicians? But Tim Wells came in and he said, I said Londonderry's, one of Londonderry's finest footballers, and it was a very proud moment for all of us when you brought the All-Ireland trophy to the United Kingdom. You know, we're sort of like, seriously, Jim, what age are we here?
Jeez. It's unnecessary.
The point to make to you about the DUP is, if you think of the peace process, what the DUP said was no, never, never, never. John Hume, Albert Reynolds, David Trimble, you know, who was persuaded then through Tony Blair and Clinton that the progressive way was the way forward. We have to switch off the violence. This is completely out of control and it's not sustainable. There's too much death. There's too much mayhem. We've got to switch it off. And Trimble did it. He screwed his courage to the post and they did it. And Paisley and the DUP howled and howled and howled, as they do, treachery to Ulster and all of that. And the peace process was signed. So the Good Friday Agreement was signed, the Belfast Agreement. And the peace bedded down from about 1996 onwards. The peace bedded down. And it's been remarkably successful, a brilliantly successful project. Mm,
yeah.
I mean, we are, Belfast is the most peaceful small city in Western Europe. So that tells you something. And I think the most remarkable peace process in living memory. But the DUP never signed it. Have still never signed up to it. But what did they do? They destroyed David Trimble for being a traitor to Ulster, destroyed the Ulster Unionist Party, and immediately, as soon as they'd done that, they took their seats in Stormont and Ian Paisley became the First Minister. The point I'm making to you is when you're a reactive, emotional party, you do the deal, whether they agree with it or not, whether they're into it or not, and you drag them with you. I mean, the bottom line is I think that the Brits are going to be wanting out very, very soon. They're going to start that conversation. They've started it already. And then we've got to be ready to make sure that we have a sensible accommodation that everybody's relaxed about. And my view there is you transition to a Northern Ireland, a Northern Ireland state. Just have everything exactly the way it is at the minute. Stormont, the MLAs, Protestant people's lives continue as normal. You know, they support Rangers. They do what they do. They've got their United Kingdom passports. Once the British are out of it, and of course you'd have the British, the European community, and the Americans as the guarantor of the new state. I mean, we're only 14 billion short every year. Like, that's, as Martin McAleese famously said, that's pocket change. I mean, you could get a long-term agreement with Europe, the US, and Britain to say, okay, look, we'll stump up 30 billion a year for the next 15 years to secure all the gains in the North, to make sure that it becomes a thriving economy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But once the English are gone, then all the triumphalism and all the stuff that the DUP are at, it becomes irrelevant. Now you've got to govern.
Yeah. Joe, you mentioned it earlier, and the two of us are mad to get onto a bit of GA talk, if that's all right with you. Jenny Smacks, who plays with me here, is a classy corner forward. Yeah, not the fastest man in Ireland, but fond of kicking, swinging him over.
If I was in my pomp in the 90s, Joe, you know, tip football would have had a different path, but unfortunately it hasn't. Joe, the one thing I want to ask you about is, like, well, I was watching Reel in the Ears recently and it was showing your All-Ireland win, and I was loving your celebration where you blew kisses to the crowd. Was that premeditated? Like, are you thinking in the dressing room, I'll tell you, I bang one today now, I'm gonna blow some kisses to the crowd?
If you had come prancing out with dyed hair like that whenever I was playing game football, you'd have got some battle.
You get a fucking clip.
The lad with the white boots and his name his name.
Stitched on the boots.
He had him.
Like a county footballer that I knew, you know, who was very, very self-centered. I mean, I'll not tell you who it was, but he had, which I saw to my shock, playing a charity match long after he'd retired, you know, long after I'd retired. He had Exocet missile tattooed on his left foot.
What? Oh, no way.
But, Joe, the blowing kisses to the crowd, where did it come out of?
Well, it was a thing. We were playing down, who were the All-Ireland champions, you see, and they'd beaten us in a replay in Ulster, in an epic replay. Okay. They were so lucky to survive the first day, and they went on and won the All-Ireland to beat Meath in the final, and there was great euphoria, etc., etc. And then, as was the way in those days, the National League was 2 weeks after the All-Ireland final then.
Jeez, you forget. Wow. Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it was the first or second game, but Down came up to Celtic Park to play us, you see. And I mean, Eamon Coleman says to us, boys, we have to do a fucking yard of honour for them hateful bastards, he says. So you can imagine the yard of honour now. It was like the DUP clapping a gay parade march. Or a gay pride march.
Andy!
See, so anyway, huge crowd in Celtic Park, of course, as was the way in Ulster in those days, because there was such a huge, you know, interest because of the way Down had surged through and won in All-Ireland, and then we were going, Donegal were going, etc. So anyway, I arrived late. I was getting the bus up. You know, there were very few frills for a county footballer in those days. And so I was only brought in with about 20 minutes to go. And the first ball at the Toll got, he just drove it about 70 metres. He had a huge kick toll. And it came over the top, you know, it just cushioned into my hands, and I just lobbed the Down keeper into the far corner. And the crowd just went wild, you see. And I just ran the length. It was the first time I just thought of it, you know. And people got such a chuckle out of it, you know. And I saw the demoralising effect that it had on the opposing team. So I used it sparingly.
Yeah.
When it was the killer goal, when it was the killer score, and you could see the heads going down, you know. I remember Fergal Logan said once, the Tyrone captain, it was before the 97 semi-final against us, he told me this himself, that he'd said to the team, I don't care what happens out here, he is not to fucking blow kisses. No matter what happens, he's not to get a goal. Jesus, you couldn't believe it. You know, about maybe 5 minutes before half-time, Dermot Duggan, who was a great player, you know, great passer, he just put it in a plate for me. And I'd been saying to Finbar McConnell, the Tyrone goalie, the whole match, he was 6'5", you see. And I kept going, I guess here, I was going, Jesus, McConnell, what are you about 6'5"? I said, you know what? I'm going to lob you today. I'm definitely going to lob. And, you know, you can imagine, you know, there's maybe 25,000 people at the game in Clonus, blistering hot day, really bad temper. The two teams loathed each other. See, Tyrone had beaten us in 96 unexpectedly, and so it's just warfare. And anyway, I was at this from the very start to McCall. And he'd be sort of shy, big fella, you know, for all his size, maybe 6'6". I was saying, oh my God, you're going to be so embarrassed. The paper's tomorrow. Brawley lobs McConnell for winning goal. I was at it the whole time to him, looking over my shoulder and saying, I'll probably just there. And I'll do it at the last second. You won't even realise. I says, and you're the sort of stupid big whore. That's what I was at. You're the sort of stupid big whore. You'll dive too quickly. You'll go down too. You're going to make it easy. Just a wee tip. Anyway, you'll see it was the 97 Ulster semi-final. Anyway, the ball came to me as soon as I got it. You could see him standing up. You could just see him, you know, he actually stands up. I just zipped it into the bottom corner. He went down too late. He was on the ground. And you could actually see me. I did and tussled his hair. I says, you are one stupid whore. I says, how the fuck did you think I was going to lob a 6'6" man? You are a stupid whore. I said, and they were firing fucking bottles down and they were firing cans. But once we'd won the All-Ireland, I think that, you know, things were never the same after that. We lost the fanaticism. No. You need the fanaticism. I mean, I would never blow... The year we were winning the All-Ireland, I didn't even pay any attention to my surroundings. I mean, the ball was thrown up and at the end of the game, he came off. It was fanatical.
We have a mutual friend in Conor Moore, a.k.a. Conor Sketches, and we have to ask you, how does it feel to be impersonated on a regular basis on the internet?
That wee bastard used me as a bridge to a TV career.
He's forged a career.
And like all Free Staters, he can't do a Northern accent.
Well, what do you make of his Joe Brawley impression?
Well, you see, it's hard to know, but I do know that people find it very funny and enjoy it very much. And I'm delighted with his success. And it's something that you see with the GAA fellas. And I hope it's not taken as a slight by any of your other listeners or viewers, but what I mean is, like, let's say, for example, I'm heavily involved with the hospice movement, and we've just built a hospice in Mayo, state-of-the-art in Castlebar, and we're almost finished with a state-of-the-art hospice in Roscommon, so looking after our vulnerable neighbours. And you would have in those counties a lot of very elderly farmers and that who live alone, or, you know, possibly the widower or the widow living alone. And these hospices are a godsend. You know, it's somewhere where you can spend your last 3 or 4 weeks in an atmosphere of love and devotion and respect and integrity and all those things. And the money had to be raised from scratch voluntarily. So about 10 million for the Mayo Hospice, about 6 for the Roscommon Hospice. One of the things that we did was you looked at, well, who are the really wealthy? Because you're not going to do this with bucket collections. This has to be people, big donors who are. And what we found was that the only donors who would give the million or the half a million or the, you know, who built it were the ones from GAA backgrounds, because they all remain part of their communities. You know, they don't go off and live as a tax exile. You know, you've got great fellows, you know, from Mayo and Roscommon who have continued to be Roscommon and Mayo to the core. And, you know, you can pick up the phone to them and they answer the phone. Now, you get the other type of multimillionaire from Ireland, which is the guy from there who's gone into finance maybe and now he's a tax exile in Monaco. Like, you can't even get in touch with them. Or you get an email back from their personal assistant enclosing a check for €500. You know, good luck with your great work type of thing. And so Conor Moore, exactly the same, because he's a GA guy, because he's one of us, we can all celebrate his success because he's not a dick.
Yeah. He's all right.
Do you know what I mean? And if you pick up the phone and you say to Conor, look, Conor, I really need something. Can you help me with this? No problem. Where do I need to be? What can I do for you? You know, I have said to Conor before, look, there's a kid here who's dying, or, you know, a kid who's extremely ill. They're a huge fan of yours. Would you come and visit them? You know, they haven't got long to go. No problem. Where do you need to be? So that's the difference. And so it's a delight to see him doing so well, because he's a terrific young man. And I think that because of the range of his talent, you know, through politics, golfers, soccer managers, players, everything that he can do, the sky is really the limit. And also on top of that, you add the fact that he's a great worker, and also that he's so personable. You know, it's just, I have to say, it's a pleasure to see him flourishing, even though he still can't do a Northern accent.
Joe, the reason you're on with us today is to talk about 65 Roses in aid of cystic fibrosis. It's something you're passionate about. Like, how did it come about that we know that you're a very charitable man, and how did this link with cystic fibrosis come about?
Selflessness is the most selfish path that you can take, because you get such personal rewards from it. You know, I cannot tell you, when I had this wacky notion, I'm going to give a kidney to somebody, right? It just came into my head. And as soon as that came into my head, I was euphoric. You couldn't have tied me to stop me doing it. You know, I remember telling my parents, I told them about a week before I was doing it, that my mother nearly had a heart attack.
Why?
I was getting waves of euphoria. I couldn't wait to do it. I said, like, I am going to save somebody's life. I will be responsible for their life being beautiful after this, you know. And I'll always have.
Was it just a notion, Joe?
Well, I think, you know, it was, I was an abused child, and I think that one of the things that comes with that is a feeling that you're not as good as anybody else, that you're lesser somehow. And for me, once I'd done that, you say, well, look, this is what I can do. I didn't say that, but, you know, that's what you felt. Look what I can do.
Yeah.
Hey, come on. And it opened the door into a world that I hadn't known anything about, the world of our neighbours suffering and transplant, and then particularly cystic fibrosis. I'll tell you a story about that. So I very quickly got immersed in that. A number of things struck me. First was the sacred bond between the mother and the cystic fibrosis child. Because a mother has to abandon her life. There is no life for the mother because this child can't breathe. This child requires oxygen. This child has to be, you know, has to take special feeding pills before they eat, protein pills, so that they don't vomit. They may have to have a pig in their stomach. They have to have constant physiotherapy, constant work. And as the child becomes an adult and gets sicker and sicker and sicker, as was the way then, the mother becomes the child's life and they become intertwined. And for me, that was an amazing thing to see. How easily these mothers gave up their lives for this, you know, precious child. And I'll tell you a story about it that illustrates the importance of transplant and people, you know, signing up and telling their loved ones, look, if that's what you wanted to do, God forbid, we want you all to have happy lives, even you that died here. Long and happy lives, but God forbid anything happens. If you have that conversation, yeah, it's amazing you can save 5 or 6 lives. So you're on life support, your life is gone. But what a consolation for your family that your altruism has saved 4 or 5 other lives. Maybe a child's life, an infant's life. I've seen it. I've seen them. You know, I've seen many, many children who are alive now because of that simple decision to say, look, if anything ever happens to me, don't worry about it. This is what I want. Boom. So anyway, Gary Dempsey and Gary Dillon, I became so close to them because I was, you know, visiting, in, for instance, the cystic fibrosis patients and all that. You have to be so careful. They're kept in. Once they become very ill, like the two boys were, so Gary Dempsey from Donegal, Gary Dillon from Sligo, and they were in adjoining rooms in St. Vincent's, and they were the best of pals. And during all the time that I was visiting them and then in contact with them, and in the short periods when they were home, and maybe sometimes longer periods if they were feeling well and not getting infections, I would they'd be talking about each other and all, and tablets and all this here. You know, they were always on FaceTime. And then one day, it was like being hit over the head. Gary Dillon just casually said to me, I was saying, like, you know, must be, you know, lovely when you're able to spend time with Gary. And he said, you know, we've never actually met because of the risk of cross-infection. Never met.
Oh, yeah.
And then shortly after that, Gary Dillon, for want of a set of lungs, 30, 31 years of age, a beautiful man, died. And Gary Dempsey, a few months after that, got a set of lungs. And he's alive and well and he's alive and well and ripping it up in Donegal as we speak, working, you know, doing all the normal things. So it shows you that path, the different path, you know, to death, yeah, or to a new life.
So we're asking everybody to register as an organ donor.
Absolutely. And then on cystic fibrosis, there have been marvelous advances over the last 5 years in medication. Trikafta, Orkambi, Kalydeco. Because what happens with cystic fibrosis is that you have a mutant gene and the gene produces mucus. So if you think of your genetic material around your lungs, it starts to produce mucus. The mucus starts to fill into your lungs. Then it becomes an infection gallery because your lungs have a massive surface area. You get sicker and sicker. Your lungs start to fill up. You can't breathe properly. And then you get infection after infection, infection after infection. And then you just get sicker and sicker. You can't eat properly. Your other organs start to close down, you know, and there's been huge work done by the Cystic Fibrosis Society, you know, trampolines, dislodging mucus, you know, keeping you healthy. There's a huge amount of voluntary work's gone into that. But these three drugs, for the first time, are tackling the root cause. So kids now who are born with cystic fibrosis have a marvellous chance of a long life. And the Cystic Fibrosis Week is so important because it's a very small charity. Ireland's the capital of the world for cystic fibrosis. It's a mutant Celtic gene. We would have over 1,000 patients. And this week is so important because the 65 Roses campaign, it brings in usually about €1 million. And if we can bring in €1 million, then the foundation, which is small and terrific volunteers, and one of the great sort of, I've been the ambassador for 7 years now, which is a great privilege and honour for me. And, you know, if people can support 65 Roses, and you'll get it if you go on 65roses.ie. The reason it's called 65 Roses is because that's the, how they teach children with cystic fibrosis how to pronounce it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not just the money. It's the fact that they say, they realize then we are not alone because they're so isolated. They're in the house. They're avoiding infection. They're avoiding other human contact. You know, very many of them are like that. And so to see a public display of support for them, it's terrific for morale.
Unfortunately, for the second year in a row, Cystic Fibrosis Ireland cannot proceed with their 65 Roses Day collections on Friday the 9th of April due to the COVID-19. But you can support people with cystic fibrosis by taking part in a 65 Roses Day challenge or donating at 65roses.ie. It's a great cause and it'd be great if you could all get behind it. He claims the Galtee Mountains were built by the Dundrum Kappa White Foss scheme. It's time for Noel Furlong and it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News! It's Noel's News!
Maureen.
Noel.
You just couldn't stay away.
I tried.
You have a look in your eye now, boy. You're like a lurcher looking at a hare. Huh? Huh? I'm old enough to be your father. Grandfather, if we're from Carrick. I'm spoken for, Maureen, okay?
Okay.
I must decline.
Let me down gently, Noel, thank yeah. you.
And you have your own man in the go, have you?
I do, yeah.
Head jockey, bye. Head jockey. No need for blinkers with you, I'd say. You're all right. You're all right. Hey, Jez, we had a good one Thursday.
Well,
John Paul came out to go to work, yeah. And I'd sold his car
just for the crack.
Yeah, for fools. I got a good laugh out of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
He must have been upset.
He took it well,
did he?
Yeah, I got a few pounds for it too. Did my 1,200 pounds for it.
Go away.
Yeah, no, 306.
Shit,
that's some money. Now, all his tools are in the back, like, but this is worth a couple of grand anyway, you know. No, I let it go for 1,200. Yeah, fair is fair, you know.
Who'd you sell it to?
Hey, some fucker, some lad in town, came out and took it away. Done deal, bye. JP took it well now.
Did he?
Hey, one of his pals gave him a lift, he's alright. He's good or correctly dead now. One time when he was small, April Fool's, I told him his mother was dead.
That's no. Shocking.
We should have seen the carry on of him crying and I made her stay at her sister's for a full week. kept her going and he was even stayed home. Daddy, why is there no funeral? And it's what Mammy wanted.
You're a bad man though.
Mammy also wanted you to clean out the sheds. And there's nuts down, need to be dropped down the side field. That's what Mammy would have wanted. So we brought her back Easter Sunday. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Jesus.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going cooking the fucking lamb on my own. You know what I mean? Respect. Bit of news.
Yes.
Right. Stick him up. It's a me.
Who?
Who am I doing? Who am I doing?
Joe Pesci.
No, close. An offer he can't refuse. I lift home and a ride. No.
Godfather.
The Godfather.
Hey.
The Italian Mafia. Right? Hardy buys.
Yeah.
Hardy bucks. Not to be trifled with. They're like a well-dressed Fianna Fáil. Right? The 'Ndrangheta gang.
Oh.
Who are wanted men by the Italian guards. And one of the main men, Mark Ferran Claude Baiarta. He wouldn't put him in a county draw ticket, no, but... He's been on the run for 7 years.
Oh my God.
Wanted for drugs. He was a drug man.
Was he a drug man?
He was a drug man. On the drugs. But the guards found him. Do you know where they found him?
Where?
On YouTube. He has an Italian food cooking channel. Yeah. And him and he makes Italian food with the wife. And the guards were sure they neutered him because he had very distinctive tattoos on his arms. So they arrested him. But if you ask me, it has to be the wife's fault.
Why?
She must have wanted him to get caught. Get him out of the picture and she get the money.
Oh.
I know how it goes. I've seen the films. All those gangster ones.
Okay.
Do you know the one where Al Pacino robs a shop?
Which one's that?
Sparface.
Very good.
And there's a fella going around telling fibs all the time. He's the codfather, they call him. You don't fool me. The Italians, though, they're big into the food. They can't resist.
Yeah.
Pizza.
Yeah.
Going on about it.
Pizza's lovely.
It's a fucking sandwich is what it is.
Would you not like pizza?
It's fine, but I hear him now going, oh, wood-fired oven.
Yeah.
Like when I was growing up, how do you think we fired the fucking oven? They were all wood-fired, weren't they? Spaghetti?
Yeah.
You could touch the roof with that.
What?
Huh? They love garlic. Everything, garlic.
Do you not like garlic?
It's very good for you, though.
Yeah.
My mother ate a clove of garlic every day.
Wow.
And she lived to be a ripe age. Some say she's still alive.
Go away. What? Who?
No, she's dead. She's definitely dead.
Like. Okay, right, but some say she's still alive.
Some people say.
But she's definitely dead.
But some people, she could be out there. The garlic will keep her going.
But she's definitely dead.
But I know.
She's definitely dead.
That'll be good to her. Adult home remedies are good though, you know.
Just to clarify, is she dead?
Oh yeah. Well, I buried her anyway. She's fucking dead now. Gotta be good to her. Woman's a saint. But the home remedies, we had all these, you know, growing up. Nettle soup.
Yeah.
No nutritional value, but you find out which your children are cowards. An onion before bed.
I've never heard of that.
Well, my mother swore by it as a contraceptive. For a finish, she had to start rubbing it on her back too. No stopping down for them. Yeah. Diesel.
Diesel.
When Paddy Fong was a baby, his mother used to rub diesel into his feet. Keep away colds and flus.
Go away.
Yeah. May have contributed to his love of driving. The doctor did diagnose him with diesel feet.
Diesel feet.
Or born to run. That man. He loves the smell of diesel.
Paddy.
Ever since he was a baby. Jeez, there was nearly an accident one night though. A neighbour was minding little Fong. Didn't she put petrol on his feet instead of diesel? He nearly blew up.
He's just stuttering around his
head. You can't put petrol into diesel engine. Women. In fact, they always drank the rainwater, though, the Fongs.
Rainwater? Why?
Loved it. They drank it from the gutters, off the roof, but they drank it from the chutes. You know, Paddy loves the chutes.
Yeah, he's always on about the shit.
Eating dandelions. Every breed of a berry you could put out of a ditch, he'd ate it by. He'd ate dock leaves for the blood, mint for the stomach, the whole lot. Never been sick in his life. He never caught the chicken. He was only buying school not to get the chicken pox.
Wow.
They actually rubbed a sick child against him for a full half hour. The Christian Brothers did. No good. Fong's digestive system by it break topaz. Now what do you say? Iron.
Iron, yeah.
You don't know your Mohs scale of mineral hardness though, do you?
Wow.
You know what I mean? We'll be at the old welding. I know the old bits.
I thought you meant the garage topaz.
No, topaz is a mineral.
Oh.
Not like what you get in a leucosade or anything. Yeah. It's like a mineral. It's a mineral out of the ground. Now, I don't know where they get leucosade out of, but I don't think they fucking dig it up. So, his brother then, Baby Fong. Do you know Baby Fong at all?
I don't know Baby
Fong. Oh, Baby Fong is a character, but he used to lick the moss off stones.
Why?
I was a bit of a wanting him. I don't know if there was any actual value to it. Just okay. Kept him out of trouble.
For the crack.
Yeah. Another home remedy that was popular in our house. My father would often punch me in the kidneys.
Why?
That was a cure for stealing fags. Well, my favourite home remedy, though, is, of course, sex.
Oh.
Sex can cure cuntitis. If you're a woman is suffering from the symptoms of cuntitis, maybe she needs a good ride. Symptoms include, but are not limited to, nagging, saying things like, I need money for food. What have you done with the children? Would you not change your underpants? And so on. Bring peace and harmony back to your life with a regular dose of the fattening stick. 2 to 3 doses a week combined with a balanced diet should suffice.
fattening stick.
Pull out to avoid side effects.
Oh, that's filth. Absolute filth.
Now, as to home remedies, you don't talk about it anymore.
No.
You forget.
Are you still at the home remedies?
Oh, yeah.
3 times a week?
Well, I definitely haven't room for Maureen in my schedule. Anyway.
Oh, he's glad she's back.
Oh, yeah.
Spoken like a true...
Deviant. It's like watching the sunset.
Sex menace.
Easy now. Handy. Come on.
Handy.
Leave it off.
Thanks, Noel.
Good luck.
She bought her boyfriend 15 cream eggs just to keep... He loves the cream eggs, boy. Just to keep him happy over Easter. Maureen, what's your mystery topic? Are you back in the room now? I'm almost afraid of what this mystery topic is going
to
be.
No, I'm going to be nice to you. Well, I'm not going to... I'm going to be easier for a little bit start. So, ooh. Johnny B, you've a tattoo on your ankle. What does that say?
Nothing is impossible.
Yeah, I kind of thought when you showed me that, I was like... You're full of shit. Like, yeah, it's like, it doesn't, okay. That statement
doesn't hold back, Mara.
Yeah, I was like, surely there are limits on what humans can do, right? So my question to you is kind of a philosophical one. Like, do you actually believe that's true? Because up until last weekend, I would have believed that that's not true. I'm like, you know, people have limits. But then, do you know who Francis Ngannou is?
No.
Doesn't work in Super Value.
No. Okay, so he became the UFC heavyweight champion last weekend, and his story is just mental. So he grew up in Cameroon, very limited education. Like, at the age of 10, he started working, literally shoveling sand onto a lorry. That's how he made money. Yeah. Then when he was, I think, 21, he moved to the main city in Cameroon, took up boxing. Like, he always wanted to be a boxer.
Yeah.
And he did that for a while and then decided he needed to get to Europe. And it was like the first time I've properly heard the experience of an African migrant trying to get from Africa to mainland Europe. Like, he tried 7 times. Like,
fuck.
With smugglers and rafts.
Yeah.
And all,
oh, it's mental. So it took him, I think, a year and a half to get to France. So got to France, was homeless, started training at a boxing gym there. And the guy who owned the gym was like, look, you can train for free and you can sleep in the gym. And then he happened to be volunteering at this homeless shelter, which made food for people. And it just so happened to be next door to an MMA gym. And they were like, so at the age of 22, he took up MMA. And 8 years later, he became the UFC heavyweight champion. And it's like Las Vegas. Like, so he, like, the average person in Cameroon earns $1,500 a day. Or sorry, not a day, a year. And he's like a millionaire now. Like, and he's only, like, I watched, so it was his second time, I think, trying to gain a title shot. The first time he fought for the title, like, I was watching it, like, he's a phenomenal boxer. I think he's been, like, I think he's, like, the hardest puncher on record in the UFC. Jeez. Like, apparently it's, his punches are equivalent to getting hit by a Ford Escort going 80 miles an hour, so...
That'll do you, all right.
So
when Paddy Fong's driving.
Yeah. So and his take, like, so he'd really good boxing, but like absolutely no jiu-jitsu or wrestling. He just got taken down the whole time. But he went back at it, trained really hard, and just became such a better fighter. Like, it's scary how good he is, and it's amazing that he's come from that. So I'm just kind of like, do you actually believe that if you set your mind to something that you can do it?
Hmm.
Or do you think that you're actually held back by society? Or, like, the only person holding you back is yourself?
Yeah, I was a bit of both. So sometimes you need to shake off the kind of shackles of society. Like, when we were starting, there were a lot of people kind of looked at us sideways going, you know, you have jobs. What are you doing going out on your phone making sketches? You sap. So it's actually early on, I heard a quote from Bono who said, like, you have to embrace the ridiculousness of it. And that kind of struck a chord with me. It's like, so yeah, what if people see me walking up and down the road there in the evening with a notepad writing down funny things? Well, fuck it, I'm a comedian. Get used to it. So I have to kind of embrace that life. And that's the one thing that stood to me.
Yeah.
And I do think that pretty much anything is possible.
Anything's impossible as well.
Even Einstein said, he's a scientist, and he said you're never going to do anything great without enthusiasm. So that'd be my, I'd be a glass half full kind of guy.
Okay.
Yeah, Johnny's definitely more positive than I am. No, but at the same time, like, I was just having a chat with one of my friends recently, and he was like, I like when I hang around you. He was like, I like when I can hang around you and Johnny, because, like, you're just always happy. And I was like, well, that comes with the territory of the job that we, yeah, well, like, you know, we don't have to go up at 7 o'clock in the morning. But, like, and he was like, no, but, like, I just mean you're positive people. And when I hang around with you, I'd be coming away happier than I would if I hung around with other people. And that just made me think, like, Jesus, like, I remember years ago hanging around with people who were like, well, this is it. It can't get any better than this. Should we have jobs and that's it now? We'll just live until we die, like.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't even step back and assess their situation.
Yeah.
That's why I think playing sport has been so good for us, because sport is one of the few aspects in your life where you come off the field and everyone has a debrief. Right, you could have done that better.
Yeah.
I need to improve on this. Yeah. But you don't say that in, like, a relationship or in your friendship. Right, how could I be a better friend? Well, it was that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we take the lessons that we've learned like that. And it's your man, is it Enda McNulty, who always says, stand guard at the entrance of your own mind. So if we come in here, there's four of us, and like if Smax comes in and he's having a fucking bad mood, let's say I come in and I'm in a bad mood because I'm after having a row with the dog or whatever.
Yeah.
So everyone else, are you gonna take that on board? Like, one person can bring the whole mood down. Like,
yeah,
you seen it? Like, you're in a drill in a training session, and one lad is like, "This is fucking shit."
Yeah.
And it's toxic to everyone else. So you're either going to soak that up, or you're going to, like, reflect it and say, I'm not listening to your shit, and try and turn the tide.
Yeah.
To me, I kind of I don't know why, but something in me says that, like, everything happens for a reason. I honestly do believe that. Like,
yeah.
And I don't, like,
in fate,
I,
do you?
I don't know if I fully believe in fate, but I think of, like, some of the things that have happened to me that have led to where I am now.
Yeah, what?
And it's like
sliding doors.
Yeah, like, how would I move? Like I took a job in Clonmel on a whim and ended up moving to Care.
Yeah.
And, like, just randomly, I could have moved to anywhere.
Yeah.
In Ireland, not the world. I couldn't afford to move anywhere in the world. But, like, in Ireland, like, I could have got, like, you know, the CIE bus somewhere.
Yeah.
But Clonmel, that job, that time, moved to Care, met Johnny.
Ended up moving in
with Johnny. That was just kind of the start of the two Johnnies. Like, random things. Like, if I just stayed at home in Roscrea for another 2 weeks, would I have ever moved to Care? Would I have met Johnny? Would, you know?
But is that just not the randomness of the universe?
It could be, or it could be fate.
But I think people...
My counsellor told me it's fate, right? Jesus Christ. It's give me a break, will you?
I don't want to be, like, shitting on anyone's beliefs, but maybe it's all just random and there's only us, just look after each other. Like, that sounds stupid, but you know what I mean? If it's not all fate, then isn't there a comfort in thinking that it's in your hands?
I do think as well it's in your hands.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying I fully believe everything happens, like, for me, but I mean...
the coach on Last Chance U, and he's talking about, like, this is just a plan that God gave me. Whereas I'd be like...
I don't believe that now.
Ah, but it's, everything is in your hands. And obviously, we've been dealt a good hand in life by being born in Ireland and having our health and our families, like, you know what I mean? I don't think we'd be the two Johnnies if we were born homeless in India, or, you know what I mean? Like,
we've had
a fair head start in terms of the world population.
Yeah.
And blessed with these good looks, John. You know what I mean? Come on.
Speak for yourself. But, I do think, like, most things, if you'd asked me 6 years ago when I was working a normal job, would I have said anything's possible? I would have said no way.
Yeah.
But then, like, when something happens and you're like, Jesus, there's that door's half open. Like, I can stand there now and watch it and let it close back on me. Or I can cop on and, like, give it a go. Like, as I said, when I gave up my job in Super Value, I was like, sure, like, what harm? I go for it and it goes tits up. I'll come back and ask me, like, I'll be humble enough to be like, look, try to make it there as, like, you know, a fucking international touring artist. It didn't work out. Can I have my job back? And I would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, there's still times in my head where I go, fucking Jesus, like, well, you know, what if it all goes tits up? What am I going to do? But you can't live like that. You have to be, like, go for it. And that's why I'm not saying nothing's impossible. Like, I'm not, like, I suppose if I wanted to become a pilot, I'd just go and get all the lessons. You know, just, like, if you think about anything logically, it's like, you know, right, okay, I want to hurl senior for tip. People will say that's impossible. But if I completely gave up my job and trained for 8 hours a day solid for 2 years,
You'd have a fair rattle.
You wouldn't be too far away.
I do have Liam Sheedy's phone number.
Yeah, we were thinking about ringing him on April Fool's Day to ask him could I go in for a trial. No, but I'm not saying you're nailed on.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at least you gave it a go.
Yeah.
So,
but Maura, you've probably seen it in the world you live in too, that we're kind of living in that creative space and we have had a little look through the trapdoor.
Yeah.
People would say, people think that like television and radio and whatever is all a different universe.
Yeah. Oh, people think that, yeah, it's like, oh, you got a job in RT because you know someone who works there. It's all your relations. Like, you don't know anybody who works in RT. Like, so it's just...
Well, you do now. You've made some friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be worried more if you didn't know anyone.
I suppose I do agree with you that, like, I'm coming around to more that, like, you shouldn't put limits on yourself, or you should have... It's okay having really high expectations for yourself, but at the same time, you do need a little bit of luck, because Francis Ngannou also made the point that, like, okay, it took him 7 goals to get across to Europe, whereas he, like, in the past year, 3 people from his village have actually, 2 of them have died trying to make the cross, and one got sick in Morocco and couldn't do that. So, like, it's, yeah, it's mental. I would go back, recommend people go listen to, if you're having a little pity party, like, you know, lockdown is like,
oh, bank holiday Monday, people listening to this, I'd say there's going to be a few people having pity parties.
Yeah, go listen to a bit of Francis Ngannou talk about his life, because it's just like, it's very inspirational. Yeah. And you just need that little, you know, the little zhuzh, the little like, okay lads, we can get back.
But like anyone out there can make a change if they want to, like, not to be going full fucking life coach, like, and who am I to give advice, but like, if you're in a job and you're like, I fucking hate this, and that was me honestly every morning, I'd be like, fucking, is that the alarm clock? Jesus Christ, nearly like tears in my eyes going into work. Like, and then you thaw out like after a while. And then Johnny would be like, sure, why don't you like do a night course? Well, like, ah, fuck that. Like, you know what I mean? So like at the same time, as much as I didn't want to be there, I didn't have the motivation to go and do anything else because I had no interest in anything else. Obviously, two Johnnies just felt.
But it's a bit scary, and people can be afraid to say what they really want.
Mm. Yeah.
When you were doing that job, you were really good at it without trying that hard.
Mm.
So you're in your comfort zone.
It's a fucking class butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say
you're one of the best.
The second best. Yeah. Let's say you're out having a beer after work.
Mm. And that was an occurrence, yeah.
What are the chances you turn around to your mates and go on, do you know what?
I think I'd like my own show on RT.
or whatever. I'd like to start my own business. I'd like to retrain. Maybe I could go back and get my law degree after all those years or something. Yeah. People will start laughing at you.
Yeah.
So we can be afraid to be scoffed at. And often you're kind of living in that fog where you're not really sure what you want. You just know that you're not quite hitting the nail on the head in the life you're currently living or in the job you're currently working in.
Yeah.
So it's hard to actually nail on your colours to the mast and say, this is what I want and this is how I'm going to go get it. Because that means that you really have to look at yourself.
Yeah.
And we don't always like...
There is that theory. What we see. There is that theory that if you do 10,000 hours of anything, you'll become an expert.
Mm.
You do 10,000 hours now of like rugby, you're gonna be not a bad rugby player. Better, like, you have absolutely no coordination. Like, then you know, take up the tin whistle or something. But I to finish and answer your question, I believe nothing is impossible. But like, in order for it to become possible, you're gonna have to put in some amount of work.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. Like. And as I said, if you'd asked me 6-7 years ago.
But we caught a glimpse of it.
Yeah.
We stuck our head into Pandora's box. Aye.
And fairness, there's no one. You want to stay away from sticking your head in boxes.
Max went down on Pandora.
Yeah, I fucked Pandora.
Right in her box.
But no, as you said, we seen it. Like, but at the start, like, people were like, oh, everyone's laughing at you. No, yeah, I remember someone saying that to me.
Yeah.
The
success straight away. We're comedians, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're like, ah, look, we're going to give it a go. They're like, fucking ages. Like, look at the dopes out their camera phones.
But just as much as I think, like, I'm willing to work hard, straight away, Smacks was like, we're going to be huge. And
yeah, this delusion. It always works.
When I see other people, I don't know who our contemporaries would be, but let's just say, like, internet people who started around the same time as us.
Yeah.
And I have to say, they don't have that attitude that Smacks has, which is like, no, I'm not taking any wages this week because we need to buy a new camera. Or like, I'm not fucking taking second best for Atten. We're going on that show, right? Fucking, let's go get suits. We approached Everton
Yeah.
Like we were the biggest and best in the world from the start.
Yeah.
And people were kind of looking a bit side-eyed at us. But then I see other people who started around the same time as us.
Yeah.
And like, they still had their full-time jobs and they haven't pulled the trigger because
we went
balls deep. We went all in. Yeah.
It can be hard to fail.
It was a bit scary at start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you know what I mean, the only way to get your parachute to open is jump out with a plane. Like.
Yeah.
I'm still afraid of some of the.
We left now
that you said that, I'm still thinking back and just been like, Jesus, I remember shitting myself. I was also shitting myself in the first 6 months when I gave up the job and we didn't have any money coming
in. No money, like.
That was grim. That was fucking grim. I'm not going back to that.
Man,
watch what we say.
We had no money for a long time, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because we put everything back into cameras and the whole lot. Like, we knew straight away if we're going to be at this game, like, you're going to have to own all your own stuff, like, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you're renting out.
Yeah. Very interesting, lad.
We probably went off topic there. But.
Do you remember the carpet that's down in this room? We were only talking about.
When we built the studio, we got the carpet down or whatever, and it was 300, I always remember, it was €330.
Yeah.
For the carpet to cover this room. Like, and we need the carpet because it had to be soundproof. And we went round to the industrial estate and we're like, yeah, we're building a studio. Like, fucking, your man came in, I'll fit it. And he was like, do you want me to put underlay? We're like, fuck no, Jesus Christ. I'm going to laugh, this lad, underlay, how much is that? So he came down and laid the carpet. And then we were like, Jesus, fucking don't have the wallets. We fix up to there in tomorrow or something.
Should
like
we
that.
Know I'm like?
Yeah.
We hadn't a penny in the business account.
Yeah.
No, we couldn't pay him.
We couldn't afford to pay
for like 9 months.
I wasn't that long now.
It was fair long, lad.
It was a couple of months. I was dodging him.
Yeah, like.
I couldn't afford to pay for the carpet.
We didn't go near the industrial estate. And then we got a few pounds. We're like, fucking pay that lad. We'll pay him. He's going to take it back.
With no money?
With no money, yeah.
Well, shit, look, at everybody has, you know. Yeah.
And I'd just like to go on record saying we still don't have any money. Those people are working for us. It's someone else's money.
It's just sometimes people are like, oh, I went to college and I was Play-Doh and now I'm hard. Now I'm set. That's me.
Yeah.
But I think you're Play-Doh all your life. You're like a jigsaw. There's new pieces of you arriving all the time if you want.
Can't believe how philosophical we got. I feel emotional now. I think I need a pint. Give me a can. Maura, I really enjoyed that, Mr. Topic. Good to have you back.
Can't believe
totally different dynamic when we're all here.
Yeah.
Fuck the COVID. We should be fucking off to the pub by and having a big,
I can't believe Maura didn't cut the back off us on her Mr. Topic.
I thought like a year and not seeing us, now she'd come in like shooting from the hip. It'd be like pew, pew, period, pew, pew, like tampons, fucking, all that stuff. But we've survived. Thank you, Maura. Don't forget to rate, review, tell your friends about the two Johnnies.
Genital tattoos. What do you think? Prince Albert. What's he called?
Prince Albert. Yeah.
Is it a Prince Albert? Or you pierce yourself?
Top. You don't pierce yourself. You're a professional to pierce the top of your penis.
Rate, review.
Tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast. Use the hashtag #TwoJohnniesPod. That's the number two to get in touch. Get us on Instagram @TheTwoJohnnies and email podcast@TheTwoJohnnies.ie.
Yeah, you can subscribe to us on YouTube. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Noel on Twitter.
Yeah.
And if you want to see any of our beautiful merch, it's on TheTwoJohnnies.ie.
Now, time to round off the podcast with our Yurts and Dirts of the Week. What have you got, Johnny?
Well, my Yurt of the Week is that a gang has, I don't know if this is a yurt or a dirt, but a gang of youths has formed in Care during the COVID. And they're all able to do wheelies on their bikes.
The wheelie gang.
The wheelie gang, people are calling them.
Can I jump in on that? I don't know if it's a yurt or dirt as well, but I'd like to also equally jump share in. That. These young lads are some hard bastards because they were all cycling the bike the other day with no tops on. It was 11 degrees out.
13 max.
How hard are these lads? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard. Like, you look hard enough when you're cycling a bike. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know.
No. As a young lad, like, they were cycling, like, you know, nearly side saddle. Do you know, like, they were cycling, going down the street, like.
Yeah.
Well, boys, how are you boys? Do you know what I mean? With the leg up on the only one leg on the pedal.
The Scott haircut.
Yeah. And then, like, add into that, no top. And, you know, sure, they're not factoring on the young lads, like.
Anyone who can cycle a bike with no hands is hard.
Yeah, I swear to God, I'm really sweating in here as well. But I jump in on that. I was impressed by their hardness to not wear tops.
The wheelie gang.
I thought fair play.
And last week I was talking about a couple selling a house with raffle tickets.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, do you remember Lee Chin and Larry O?
They were doing this.
Fate Harriers.
Yeah.
In Wexford were doing it.
Yeah.
The club bought a house in Maynooth and raffled it off. Well, the couple who won the house were listening last week and they got in touch and said, yeah, it was one Sunday evening. They were living in Dublin. The wife came home and was like, oh, I just saw this thing, bought a ticket for 100 quid.
Won it.
and they won it. Won a free gaff in Maynooth.
Wow. Did they move into it or did
they? Yeah, they're in. They're loving it. So the only downside was he had to go, had to stand beside Chinner for the photo.
Your man said.
Yeah.
That's what any man who has to stand beside him is.
It's specimen.
It's unfortunate, yeah.
Stephen and Jessica in Dublin.
Oh, that's incredible.
That is my yurt, Johnny.
I don't have a yurt at all, but I just want to give an update on the cat.
Right.
Because, you know, this. He's got another fucking abscess, man, on the leg.
You want to put him down, lad?
Don't say that now.
You said that with my dog.
Went to the vet, got the. Yeah, but your dog was seriously ill, lad. There was something wrong with his lungs.
He's all right.
He's got his second wind.
The cat is still alive.
But do you ever watch Pimple Popper?
No.
Yeah, the cat. And Annie was like, Jesus, we may wash it, like, whatever. So she was holding it, and then she squeezed.
It bust.
Bust.
Ah!
Down, yeah, down the side of his leg, lad. I just, sorry, you know, I think that's a dirt. but it's grim. But the cat is on the mend. Annie's father kindly gave us the purple spray that you spray on cows. So we sprayed that on the cat. The cat is snow white. And now it's just got one of his paws. It's just bright purple. So we're hanging in there. More updates to come next week as we get it. Johnny McMahon, Care Veterinary Clinic, County Tipperary. That's it for this week.
Well, I'll make you up your word.
Do you know what? How good can this Easter weekend? You're treating me, man.
Well, it's not really a make up your word.
A monitor.
I just heard that, you know what the word for president is, that like Uachtaráin.
Yeah.
Because we know the gaff, Áras an Uachtaráin.
Yeah.
But Uachtar means cream.
Yeah. Uachtaróite, ice cream.
So like Uachtaráin, they reckon, is like the cream of the crop.
A rise to the top.
That's what people say the word Uachtaráin president comes from.
Make you up word of the week, boy.
Yeah, look, it could be true.
Could be bullshit too.
Good chance it's true. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, another week down. We hope you all had a good week, good Easter. We're recording this just before, on Good Friday.
There was a bit of a delay on the line with Joe Brawley, so if you feel like we don't react when we should at times.
Yeah, we're not like on some sort of a psychedelic drug.
Yeah. It was hard to hear him at times, okay?
Yeah. He we asked him, had he got earphones, and he said, I don't listen to music. From me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B.
From me, Maura.
Look at that, no lag.
Look at that. Oh, it's so nice. Good luck.
Good luck.